What's up, CPAC? It's your boy, Z-Dog MD, and I have an extra special guest, my drug dealer, Deanne Mullins.
Hello. Hi, CPAC. I can't believe I'm here.
Hey, yeah.
CPAC. Like, I'm one of you. I sit there and watch, just like you watch, and now I'm here. So, and Tad is right there.
What up, fam? How's it going? You know what? You have been a fan of Tad. For as long as I can remember having Tad. And just so you guys know, ZPAC, so Deanne is the president. She's a pharmacist, a community pharmacist to be more specific.
And the independent community pharmacist.
So there's non-independent community pharmacists?
There are.
Like, are there?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
22,000.
Wow.
In fact, if you add up all the CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aids, they total about 22,000.
That is enough pharmacists to actually get us a decent number of views on the videos that we have that fail all the time, Tom Honnaber.
Totally. And if one of y'all could hook it up with Norco's, that'd be great.
Okay, so. We're gonna pretend that Tom never said that. But we are talking about drug dealers, and Deanne is the president of the National Community Pharmacy Association, which is the biggest group representing. It's 119 years old.
119.
119, which to me is a teenager in vampire years.
Yeah.
So, and y'all are total vampires. Well, wait, so, I mean, where to begin? Because I wanted to have a pharmacist on the show forever and ever and ever. And why? Because you know what I think about pharmacy,
mm-hmm.
which is that a pharmacist practicing at the top of their license can help us transform medicine to 3.0. And when I met you, and you've been a fan, which blows my mind because we're idiots.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know this, and Tad knows this, that's the thing. But the fact that you believe in this movement as
Very much so.
First of all, it means a lot to us, but second of all, I think the ZPAC understands that it's going to take nurses and pharmacists and respiratory therapists and nutritionists to build this vision of 3.0, and you have articulated that vision better than I ever could. I've seen you talk live, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to steal that.
Oh, thank you.
So tell me, I mean, what's going on with the independent pharmacy community?
Well, you know, I often think we're kind of like the Jon Snow of, you know, the pharmacy family or the healthcare family. Pharmacy has so much.
No spoilers. I'm only on season 7, episode 1.
I'm kind of behind too, so I don't know that I could mess too much up. But do you remember? No. So we're mom and pops, which, you know, I understand, and that's what people think, but we're also laboratories of innovation. And we are able to create and pivot and shift and do really cool things clinically because we're small and we don't have to go through hierarchies. And so independent pharmacies are, we triage. I like to think of us as tragedy filters. We do all kinds of.
What do you mean tragedy filter? I like the sound of that.
Yeah, so.
I like tragedies. I'm not going to lie to you.
A lot of times. I mean, we're the last thing between a patient and tragedy. If we're doing our job right and we know our patients, we have relationships, very good relationships with our patients. They talk to us, we talk to them, we know them. And so, we catch things all the time. We do things clinically, and yet we often get thought of as these drug dispensers or, you know, we're just a commodity. We're selling stuff, and we're not. We're healthcare professionals first.
I mean, it sounds to me like you guys are suffering through what everybody in healthcare is suffering
Absolutely.
Through right now, which is the health 2.0 commodification assembly line process where we're all expendable raw materials in the factory of medicine.
Yes.
But the thing is, I know this because I have had my butt saved by pharmacists all the time because they will call me and say, Doc, I see you wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
Were you thinking this? Because the thing is, this patient is on this, and I actually know this patient, and I know that she tends to do this, this, and this. So would you think about maybe, is there anything else you do like this or this or this or this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all of the above. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thanks for saving me. But not always is the capacity of the pharmacist to act at the top of their game like that recognized, encouraged, or even nowadays, I think, trained. I worry that we're creating a culture of check the boxes, mm-hmm. do what you're told, follow the EHR algorithm, and don't use critical thinking. And that afflicts all of healthcare. But do you see this in pharmacy, or do you think pharmacy is a sort of wall against that?
We see that in pharmacy. I mean, we're being measured by metrics that make no sense at all. And so it's not about making the patient well, and love to talk about value-based care with you in a little bit, and outcomes.
Oh my God, it's so boring, Deanne.
It is so good.
Macro and MIPS. And,
it is. It being paid on outcomes is where it's at.
I mean, that's.
And pharmacy is in a position to really shine in that environment, because value is what? Outcomes over cost, right?
Yeah.
And so we are cost over outcomes.
You know how I like to think of it?
Value is?
It's pi divided by 3, carry the 1. But the way I think of it is the intersection of cost, outcomes, or quality, and convenience. So the patient has a great outcome at a low cost, and they feel like I got this in an easy way that found me where I was instead of making me go jump through hoops.
Right.
Now, where in healthcare do you find that? Almost nowhere these days, right?
Right?
So how do you think pharmacy, because again, you lead an organization that represents community, independent community pharmacists. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you hate on the chain gang.
No.
Right?
No, we love our brothers and sisters in chain environments, and there are great pharmacists in chains, and you know, a lot of them love what they do and they're in good environments, but I know a lot of pharmacists in the chain environment where they're understaffed and they don't have enough help, and you know, they're filling way more prescriptions than they should, and they're just not happy. And so again, they're treated like commodities instead of professionals.
So do you think, are you able in an environment where it's a volume-based mill, are you able to actually use the critical thinking to be a tragedy filter, to know your patient, to develop relationships? Can you do that in that environment, or is it exclusive to independent pharmacies?
No. I mean, I think good things happen in chains, but you know, more often than not, I mean, just think about your typical chain experience. Mm. And again, I don't want to hate on chain pharmacists, because we're all pharmacists, and we, you know, we all need to be concerned about each other's practice environment, each other's challenges, whether you're in the hospital setting or you're in the chain setting or independent. We're all pharmacists, and we all have value. And in terms of the independent space, though, when I talk about value, when I talk about the pharmacy in Pharmacy 3.0, you know, a lot of those opportunities are easier for independents than they are for chains.
Yeah,
because
again, you have flexibility. You're not hierarchical. You actually get to develop good relationships with those patients. Mm-hmm. They know you. And I'll tell you, my dad, Health 1.0, right? He had a pharmacist that he almost exclusively tried to work with, and it was a small independent community pharmacist. And he knew Jack, and Jack knew him, and Jack was the only person who understood his thick accent and could read his scrawl. And this is the pre-EHR days. And I tell you, like, Jack probably saved my dad's butt a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And it was that relationship, because they both knew the patient, which gets me this interesting thing that came up on Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't a pharmacist, I heard this through the grapevine, that a pharmacist had tweeted something about their patients, and a doctor had responded and written in and goes, no, you have customers, we have patients.
Yeah.
And I heard that and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be good.
Yeah, so, and it's not good. It's not good for anyone. And what I love about Health 3.0 is that it's very much about practicing in a team-based approach, where we're all practicing at the top of our license, we all have value, we should all be encouraged to practice at the top of our license. And so to hear a physician say that, and to see a movement, a grassroots movement of nurses. And I gotta give a shout out. Nurses, some of my best friends are nurses. We just wanna help people. Pharmacists have a very helping heart. We care about people. Nurses care about people. Doctors care about people. I mean, we have so much in common that these turf wars are stupid. They're just stupid. They're wasteful. They waste time. They're not good for patient care. They're not good for our morale. We're all tired and frustrated, and we need to be, you know.
And I don't even understand how people get in turf wars over this. It's like, I want a pharmacist who is incredibly well-trained, who made the conscious decision, I'm going to do pharmacy because these are the things I care about. I don't want to stick my finger in someone's butt. I don't want to do pelvic exams. What I want to do is understand pharmacology, the interaction between drugs, dosing, chronic disease, and I want to be able to do that in an analytic way, but also have that interaction at the point of care with the patient.
Absolutely.
The tragedy filter, which I'm going to steal because that's brilliant, because you're preventing tragedies. You're the last person to talk. Many people have told me, you know, it's my pharmacist that actually spends the most time talking to me, which is depressing in the sense that it means that the rest of the team has somehow failed in 2.0, where it's click, 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 click. What are your allergies? What are your meds? Okay, here's your prescription.
Well, think about how many times a patient actually goes into a pharmacy a year. So the average patient will go into a pharmacy 8 to 12 times a year. If they're a complex patient, someone on multiple medications and a little bit older, which is probably about 80% of my patient population, they might be in as much as 35 times a year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those relationships really are a pharmacist's superpower in a value-based system of care. I mean, we have those relationships, so we have the ability to talk very frankly and honestly with patients to help them figure things out. Can I tell you a story?
Absolutely.
Okay, so.
Only if it ends in either nudity, cursing, or violence. All of them.
Well, I can curse, I'll curse.
Don't curse.
Okay.
Unless you want
to. So a good example of relationship-based care. In fact, a couple. I had a patient who came in one day and she said, my face is tingling and I'm not right. And I said, well, have you talked to your doctor? Because that's really such a broad. And she said, no. And I said, you know, you are really upset and I've never seen you like this. I really think you should go see your doctor. So she did, and she came back and she put a prescription on the counter and she says, is this gonna fix this? And I looked at it, and it was for Xanax.
Mmm, my favorite, vitamin X. It's a thing, people.
And so I said, well, I don't know. Your doctor thinks that this is what you need. I would give it a couple days, and if you're not feeling better, you need to call him back. You need to let him know.
Okay, first of all, how dare you, Deanne, second guess the doctor's prescription?
Yeah, well,
because, I mean, did you go to 4 years of evil medical school? Did you understand why that doctor may have given Xanax? Because, you know, he wanted to get that patient out of that room as fast as he could?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. So you interloped into this relationship which with your customer, because you don't have patients, only I have patients. And what ended up happening then?
So I didn't hear from her for about a week. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, well, wow. Maybe she was stressed and it was anxiety. This was before the days of the internet. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we had AOL and stuff, but you wouldn't just
Wait a minute.
Google.
AOL isn't the internet?
You wouldn't.
Tell my dad about AOL, because that's whack.
You wouldn't Google the mm-hmm. answer, but it was a Saturday and she came in and I came out of the bathroom and into my office, and she was in my office. And I mean, so she had to come from behind the counter and sit herself in my office. And she said, something is really wrong with me, and I need you to help me figure this out.
Mm.
So I started asking questions. I had an Applied Therapeutics book and my Goodman and Gilman's and, you know, all of those. And
what's a book, by the way?
Yeah,
I'm still trying to figure that out now. And then what happened?
So I started asking her questions. So didn't you just have a surgery? Yes, I had a surgery not too long ago. What, remind me again, what did they do? Well, I had my parathyroid removed.
Aha, the plot thickens.
So your parathyroid was removed, and okay, now let's talk about the symptoms. So I'm thinking, okay, what could be occurring? Well, as you know, hypocalcemia, right? She had the cardinal symptoms of low calcium. And so I said, you really need to go to the emergency room right now. So she did. And about 3 hours later, I got a phone call and she said, the emergency room doctor told me to call you and thank you because you made a big difference in my life today. So,
in your customer's life, not your patient's life.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
And I tell you, you're not alone because I know.
Thousands of those stories.
Thousands
every day
of these stories.
Our pharmacists are doing things like that every day, every day.
And this is why, this is exactly why, guys, like the the role of the pharmacist in Health 3.0 is an integral role, because if everybody gets to practice at the top of their training, you recognize hypocalcemia on the front lines in a spot where it's going to be missed everywhere else, because it's where the patient is that mm-hmm. they need the care, mm-hmm. right? And now we were talking about value, convenience, cost, and quality. Well, it's every touch point is important. Mm-hmm. And the experience that the patient gets, you know, there was recently a thing in Australia, right, where mm-hmm. this woman went on a rant and, yes. and oh, I had to wait more than 15 minutes, and that's not enough, this is a knife. And it became this huge thing where pharmacists had to step up and go, guys, you don't understand what happens behind the scenes. Like, first of all, 15 minutes ain't nothing, because we got to make sure we're not going to kill you. Right. Give the right medicine. It's not interacting with anything. The doctor didn't fill out the prescription right, so we had to call him. He's somewhere else and can't be reached, or yeah. she. And the amount of stress that's involved. I spoke at a graduation ceremony here in town for the pharmacy school. Mm. And you see all these young, for some reason, like 90% Asian crowd.
Really?
Like, yeah, it's interesting. I've noticed that on the West Coast, it's a very Asian heavy training program. Mm-hmm. And they were all like so excited to go out and actually help patients.
Yes.
But then the question is, if you catch them 2 years down the line, mm-hmm. are they demoralized? Are they burned out? Is Health 2.0 devaluing them and their contributions and their 4 years of training on top of college?
Yeah.
Right? So I know nurses Absolutely. Complain about this. I know doctors feel this way.
Absolutely.
And we've all put in all the sacrifice. So mm-hmm. what do you think is a solution for this?
A solution to burnout for pharmacy?
To reintegrate pharmacy in a way that actually allows them to do what they do, because how do you get paid for that? How yeah. do you, you know, what do you think?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
So if you look at the medical spend, so $3.2 trillion a year we're spending on healthcare. Pharmacists right now are considered a cost center. Pharmacy is a cost center. So if you look at the pie.
Sound familiar, nurses?
Medical spend, 10% is for pharmacy, for drugs, 90% is medical, right? So because of the PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, the devil. We'll talk more about that later.
And today's episode is brought to you by CVS PBM, pharmacy benefit managers, here to help you. Keep going, because we need to unpack what a PBM is.
Okay.
Because my audience doesn't know.
Well, so look, just really quick.
Yeah.
Because of the PBMs, we're siloed and we're considered a cost center. We're not a cost center. Pharmacy is an investment. And that's what we have to really start to look at, is we've got an investment on the pharmacy side, the drug side, and the pharmacist, not just the drug plus the pharmacist, to help reduce the medical spend on that 90% piece of the pie. But we're siloed. There's this wall that's gone up. So back in the day before the PBMs, it was physician, patient, pharmacist, and we all kind of worked together, and nurse. And now pharmacy's been carved out, and that we have to fix that. We have to take pharmacy and reintegrate pharmacist services into the overall health care of the patient.
So a way I see that is, you know, I'm a caveman. So I'm an inpatient doctor. You know, when you're a hammer, all the world is an inpatient waiting to be discharged. And when a pharmacist on the inpatient world practiced at the top of their license, they rounded with us. Mm-hmm. They were integrated in the team. They helped us discharge and admit patients in a safe way. They contributed important contributions in a scientific way to the care of the patient. Mm-hmm. And they cared about the patient. They went out and did the discharge planning with the patient. They sat down and went through the medications. And it was so clear to me that they were a crucial piece of the pie. Mm-hmm. And the question is, in the outpatient world, it ought to be the same. It used to be the same. Now,
yes.
why is it that these pharmacy benefit managers that were created in the 60s or whatever to actually control costs, to protect mm-hmm. the consumer, to push back on pharma, mm-hmm. how is it that they have now run afoul of that?
Yeah.
Is that what's happened?
Oh, very much so. So the idea, the initial concept of having a switch, someone that could process the claim and contract the pharmacies, that was a good concept. That was okay. We need that. We'll always probably need some degree of that. But because of the industry not being regulated or held accountable or held to any standard, I mean, they're not regulated. They control probably 78% of the nation's prescription benefits three PBMs, Express, CVS, and Optum, tremendous power, and they're not regulated or licensed by anybody. So they use now techniques that they've discovered over time to game the system. And so we honestly believe, and we have data to back it up, that PBMs contribute to the cost of medications. They don't save money. And for the pharmacist to deal day in and day out, I mean, part of our burnout and frustration is the fact that, you know, we're dictated to on, we sign contracts not knowing what we're going to get paid. Literally, we don't know what we're going to get paid. And then those same PBMs come in and they restrict the networks. They steer patients to their own pharmacies, to their mail order pharmacies that don't have relationships with those patients and provide that type of care. They audit us. So who is able to go in and audit their competitor? You know, and with all of that control, people say, well, just don't sign the contracts. And I would have to say, well, then I'm going to have to lose 80% of my business, probably more than that.
So it's particularly hurtful for independent pharmacists because they don't have an alliance with one of the monopolistic PBMs. So like CVS may be connected with a particular PBM, and Optum maybe, you know, so it particularly puts the hurt on you guys that are the guys that are actually labs of innovation, that, you know, that your pharmacy is not, it's not a loss leader to sell crap.
I don't sell candy, I don't sell sodas. I'm sorry, honey, Ken's watching and he keeps saying we gotta sell something.
Well, then why would I go to the pharmacy except for my Dalala?
We don't sell that stuff. I'm a certified diabetes educator 17 years ago. Wow. I started teaching, I started training patients with diabetes, diabetes self-management training and education. We were recognized by the ADA. We were paid by Medicare, first in the state of Florida. We can provide tremendous value. But all we're seen as you know, a cost center and competition to the PBM.
This to me is a great example of how Health 2.0 has gone so far in trying to squeeze business principles and efficiency into a model that's ultimately a human relationship. So in the 1.0 days, the community pharmacists would be there with the community docs and they would do their thing. Now, the problem with that is it was totally unregulated and very expensive and not evidence-based and paternalistic and very hierarchical, actually. But now, everybody's equal. It's like Animal Farm. We're all equal, just some people are more equal than others. And it's, we're all cogs in this machine. So you guys are a cost center, doctors are a cost center, nurses are a cost center, and the administration is incentivized, and these aren't bad people usually, they're incentivized to squeeze as much productivity and work out of a fixed cost as they can. And that's how they treat the pharmacy, and that's how they treat nurses, and that's how they treat pretty much everyone. So we're all understaffed, we're all overworked, we all don't have support, and since we're not yet paid to keep people well, nobody cares.
Right.
Because you're still generating revenue through volume. That is the fundamental sin of Health 2.0 that we haven't fixed yet. The reason I was excited to have you come out here, and also we're shooting a video tomorrow that's going to celebrate.
Don't tell anybody. It's a secret.
The worst kept secret in the world, because I might have spilled some of the beans earlier in the week. So we're shooting this amazing video, but the idea that we should celebrate when people use critical thinking and teamwork in service of each other and the patient. And something you said earlier before we started the show was like, we ought to have compassion for each other. Like, this doctor on Twitter saying, no, you have customers, we have patients. That's total crap.
Yeah, that was kind of icky.
Think about somebody just graduating out of pharmacy school, one of these, what was it, there's like 15,000 pharmacy students, I forget how many.
55,000.
55,000 pharmacy students. They hear a doctor say that crap on Twitter, and already they're primed subconsciously to underachieve what they're capable of given their training. Because, well, these guys think these are customers and I'm just a retail clerk. Well, how am I going to behave? The thing is, doctors are getting that now. You are a provider.
Can I say something about that? So I had, before I started watching your show, and I watched you before you started Incident Report. I mean, you hadn't.
That's old school.
But way back in the day. And I had compassion for nurses and doctors, and I got a shout out to our hospice nurses, because oh my gosh, I could cry when I think about hospice nurses and how awesome they are. So
yeah.
So I had this love for physicians and nurses and this collegial feeling. But when I started really thinking about Health 3.0, listening to you talk, getting to know the ZPAC by looking at comments and you know, spending time looking at what nurses were saying and doctors were saying, and I became very passionate and had a lot more compassion for our fellow healthcare professionals. We're in this together, and I firmly believe if we don't work together to fix it, it's not going to get fixed.
I mean, it's funny how, like, hearing the voice of other healthcare professionals and hearing how you might walk in their shoes and having a feeling of what it's like to be them, and how when everybody works together, practicing at the top of their game with respect and compassion for each other in service of the patient, mm-hmm. how things could actually transform.
Yeah.
And I get messages every day of bright spots where this is happening and mm-hmm. dark spots where it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And then you have it, and you guys also are the victim of frontline violence in pharmacies, maybe less in the community setting because you know your patients you've developed. But even then,
yeah.
in the setting of the opioid, and you're in the panhandle of Florida, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure opioids are an issue.
Big
issue everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do we support each other to actually solve these problems? And so far, we're siloed off. You said it. You said that 10% of medication costs is now siloed off from the 90%. But you guys can do some real damage
yeah.
in the 90%.
Yes.
And just like we can do damage in that 10% by thinking about how we prescribe. Speaking of which, what's your thoughts on, as a pharmacist, as a community pharmacist, and as a leader in the space, what are your thoughts on big pharma, the pharmaceutical industry? And it's nuanced, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's no easy answer. It's not black and white. There's a lot of gray. Pharma does a lot of good. They do. And pharma does a lot of bad. And for too long to get their drugs on formulary, they've let the PBMs have their way. So a big way that PBMs make their money is through rebates from pharma. So they pay more for a drug to get it on a formulary for a backsided rebate that doesn't typically get passed on. Now, PBMs will say now, oh, we pass everything on. But if you want to go back and look traditionally over, you know, the past 30 years, they know mm-hmm. that, you know, those rebates mm-hmm. haven't been passed. But now, right. and I think what the EpiPen situation really drew attention, and Mylan had to come out and say, well, wait, mm-hmm. you know, this is what we get for the drug, and pharmacy said, well, this is what we get for the drug. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was this big $300 plus gap of, you know, well, where's that money? Well, it's with the PBMs. And
PBMs.
So pharma now, because they're getting pressed so hard on drug cost, they're starting to say, look, you guys are culpable as well.
Yeah.
And you've got to come clean. And so we have been pushing for transparency for years, and nobody's cared. Nobody's cared.
You're going to care now, right, ZPAC? Y'all are going to be like writing your congressman about pharmacy benefit managers and being like, hey, one of them gave away like a Mercedes-Benz at a recent conference.
Dude, me and Z were at this conference and they were giving away a fully loaded GL Mercedes,
yeah.
which is like an $80,000 car, and it was raffled away to just some random woman in the audience. And I was pissed that I didn't win it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, me too. It's not that I didn't enter. I will take that PBM bucks. Come on, Deanne. Don't tell me I can't have my Mungies.
Okay.
Jenna Clack says, compounding pharmacists are individualized medicine specialists, should never be purely for cost, and that's actually not okay. That's actually not okay. It should always be to maximize patient response,
yeah.
Jenna Clack.
Yeah. And we compound at the pharmacy and are trying to defend compounding right now. We're under attack. In this country, and you know, you could debate that could be a whole nother show, but compounding is something we need to protect. Patients are not all made the same. One size doesn't fit all.
What? And the vegans would have you believe otherwise.
Compounding has a really important place.
Yep.
So yeah. Jenna?
And Steve Brannon says, in a system where physicians have less time with patients, outpatient and inpatient, we need to rely more on our allied health and other providers to practice at the top of their licenses to maximize care to our shared patients, not my patient and your customer. Mm-hmm. Physicians can't complain of burnout when we don't let other competent professionals help us shoulder the work. Medication counseling, diabetes education, diet optimization, lifestyle counseling. I think Steve is on point.
Yes, he is. And chronic disease management. Let me ask you this. I'm curious what the ZPAC thinks. Should a physician continue to see patients that are really doing well, that are stable and You know, do office visits need to really happen with a physician at that point, or can, you know, a mid-level, or can a community pharmacist be a part of that team to help manage some of that stuff? Because when I think about my docs, and honestly, I mean, what y'all go through and the education and, you know, the expertise that you have, we need to be supporting that and helping you to practice at your life.
Now you've poked me right in the hummus nest. That's what I wanted to say about the vegans. Like, anytime I upset them, I'm poking them in the hummus. You see what I did? It was a joke. This is what really gets me fired up.
Okay.
What you just said will infuriate a certain subset of doctors. And the reason it will infuriate them is you are going to take their easy repeat 99232 visit from them. That is just, hey, how's it going? It's going good. Cool. I can bill that code. Because in a system, by the way, this sounds like a trailer for a really bad movie. In a world where you're billing fee for service and every code pays the bills, you want that patient to come back for stuff that they don't necessarily need to be in your office for. It could be a telehealth visit. It could be a visit with the pharmacist. It could be a visit with a health coach. It could be a visit with a nurse practitioner, a PA, somebody who's supporting. But that's how it ought to be if you're paid on outcomes, which you brought up in the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. When we get there, then doctors will be like, well, heck yeah, there's going to be better outcomes when the patient is actually, when everybody's working on a team to support the patient.
Yeah.
So I agree with you 100%. The reason you'll get pushback in 2.0, 1.0 hybrids like we're in is that people will be like, now you're really going to take my bottom line. And that's when people will be like, well, pharmacists don't have the qualifications to be able to manage chronic disease because they didn't go to 4 years of evil medical school. They went to 4 years of evil pharmacy school. And what, you know, how,
right?
And I think that's the heart of it.
Right.
And it same goes with physician assistants, same goes with nurse practitioners. I think that's the thing. Now, you had said something else, which is in this book. I can't pick it up because I'll lose my mic. The Innovator's Prescription. This idea, I've done that before. This idea that we ought to be disrupting each other. Mm-hmm. And what this means in a business sense is we ought to be doing things more efficiently for less cost by people who are really good at it, that do a better job than the guy up here who's trying to do everything for everyone. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you force doctors to actually continue to practice at higher levels. Mm-hmm. So now a primary care doc is doing what a lot of specialists used to do, and specialists are doing incredibly complex work, and the pharmacists and the PAs and the nurse practitioners and the nutritionists and the health coaches and the dietitians and the diabetic counselors are pushing the rest of that and doing that education that now frees these other people to practice even higher.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the perfect world. Mm-hmm. We didn't go into medicine to try, some people did, but most of us didn't go to try to be everything to everyone. We want to do something or a group of things really well. Mm-hmm. And that means we need a team that does that other stuff. That's why I love being a hospitalist, because, man, I could hit, there was a point where I was like, I'm going to learn how to dose Coumadin right, or I'm going to figure out this digoxin interaction thing, or I'm going to do, and then I realized, wait a minute, I've got only so many neurons. Mm-hmm. Most of them are burned out through chronic video game playing. How about I call the pharmacist who's on my team, who I know and love, who can help me with that stuff?
Right.
Much better than I could do it. Why isn't that happening? Is it a cost thing?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, we're fee for service. We're paid to do things to people, to write prescriptions. You said it. I mean, I say it, but it's because I've heard you say it 1,000 times. And I've said it all year long. You know, moving.
But when
from
you
fee
say it, it's
service
with a beautiful Southern accent.
Oh, thank you.
That makes it much better.
Well, so when we move to value-based care, and I do want, if I could, make a point.
Yeah.
Because you know, people may be thinking, yeah, it's all well and good for the pharmacist to be practicing at the top of their license, but who's going to make sure that Betty gets her birth control pills, you know, at 8 o'clock at night through the drive-through? Mm. There will always be a need for fast, accurate, and cheap.
Yeah.
For patients that are well, you know, low complexity, low cost patients, they just, you know, need their medications. Fast, accurate, cheap, we need systems for that. Mm. And there'll be pharmacists that are involved in those systems. Dispensing is important, and I don't want to give up dispensing.
Right.
My relationships are based on that dispensing process. Mm. But when you look at volume versus value, you're going to see kind of this bifurcation in pharmacy. And you're going to see people that are really about the volume, fast, accurate, and cheap, people that go there need a pharmacy, And then you're going to see these differentiated pharmacies where you see more complex patients, mm-hmm. higher cost patients. And so we're going to be providing, you know, the dispensing, yes, that's not going to go away, but we're also going to get paid on those outcomes and that value. And I think that's the space where independents could really thrive, because we have those systems in place right now. We have delivery to patients. We have relationships with patients. We can, there's things that we're doing right now. We don't have to totally flip our practices in order to get in that space.
Well, you know, what you're describing has been trying to go on in medicine for years, which is you have your community hospital that mm-hmm. then has, you have a tertiary hospital, and they have different systems. So the community hospital handles your appendectomy, your simple cellulitis, your acute MI that isn't complicated. But then when you need something different, you have a totally different solution shop that's set up mm-hmm. to do that, whether it's a tertiary center or a center of excellence that just does heart surgeries all day long. Mm-hmm. And they're mm-hmm. so good at it. Why can't you do the same thing in pharmacy? You have the dispensing, you have the simple, because then what you can do is you can optimize for convenience and cost.
Yeah.
For the stuff that's that, and then the stuff that's complicated, you want to optimize for quality and the cerebrality of trying to figure out what's the best thing.
Yeah. So medication synchronization. So making sure that the patients are able to pick up their meds maybe just once a month, maybe twice a month, with clinical reviews. So you're not just reacting. You're proactive, so you're getting meds ready a week before they need them. You're making sure nothing's changed. You're making sure, you know, if Betty doesn't need her statin or her blood pressure medicine, why not? Why, you know, 30 days ago you got 30.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on, Betty? Well, you know, I'm achy. I don't feel good. My cholesterol was fine last time I was there. You know, opportunity to intervene, have a conversation, key in the doctor.
Key in the doctor.
And
right.
We have to have access to the electronic health record.
What?
Yes.
No.
We do.
Walls?
No.
Fragmentation?
No.
Of course you do, right? But
yep.
Do you get it? No.
But will we?
Maybe.
I hope. I mean, if we're going to be an integral part of the healthcare team, we have to be able to talk with our other colleagues about what we've done. And we want to, it's really cool, like we're such helpers. We want to help you do better in your day. I mean, we want to help our nurses, and you know, we want to be a part of making that patient well. And you know, it's when we call or when we ask questions, we're getting killed. I mean, hard.
Yeah.
I mean, we're
especially when you can't reach.
Yeah, we don't want to pick up the phone and have to call and you know, and the question that, you know, God bless our patients, I love them, but I get so tired of hearing every time a script gets dropped off, how long is it going to be? How long is it going to be? Mm. How long is it going to be? Well, you know, it depends on, you know, if your insurance is now deactivated or if there's a prior authorization or if the doctor forgot to sign the prescription or, you know, I could go on and on.
Do you think like some massive retool of the system, like a single payer insurance plan, would make that easier?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or would it be too busy destroying the entire system?
We recently, I met with pharmacists from all over the country, or all over the world, Ireland and the UK and Canada and Australia, South Africa. Mm. And you would be amazed at the commonalities that we have with our brothers and sisters in other countries with single payer.
Mm. It's the same.
It's, yeah. I think that there are challenges either way.
Throughout.
So I'm not convinced that that's the solution at all.
You substitute one insurance bureaucracy for another insurance bureaucracy. Right.
Yeah.
That's my suspicion. So, you know, there are ways to streamline and make things efficient. There are ways to specialize and make sure that there are centers of excellence, and there are ways to work better in teams, and there are ways to get paid on outcomes, and we have to push those. And
yes.
I think that's what Health 3.0 is. Mm-hmm. Tom, do you have any comments from the
PIC? I want to ask Deanne a question.
No.
How do you feel about the drive-through at the pharmacy?
Well, we don't have one.
Y'all don't have one.
We don't have a drive-thru. We have curbside pickup. You know, I get that people, you know, can't come in, and we have delivery. And, it does help patients on that convenience side. I get it, but it's never felt right for me.
Mm.
A lot of independents have drive-thrus, and, you know, if that works for them, great. But, you know, shooting drugs through a tube to somebody, it just, you know, it's not, wasn't a good fit for us.
That's a real drug dealer. right there. Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Evil drive-through, says Jeff Middendorf. Hate the frickin' drive-through. So glad I quit the job that I had one. That had one. Sharice Spittle. So doesn't
know, somebody said a little earlier, Z, and I lost their comment, but they said, "Oh, that's funny. I never even thought that not to have candy near the pharmacy or anything."
Right.
Like, and you know, in a CVS or a chain pharmacy, a Walgreens. I mean, I'm imagining a lot of times the pharmacist gives the diabetes medication and that you're
they grab a bag
and they're grabbing,
and you watch them grab a bag of candy on the way out the door.
Right?
Right.
Well, and let me just say this for people with diabetes. So in my education program, like I think deprivation is a bad thing, you know, and so our goal was always to help people, you know, really have a high quality of life. And so every now and then you want to be able to eat a donut and you want to be able to enjoy, you know, treats and things. And so I'm not against candy. People with diabetes can 100% eat crap occasionally. Everything in moderation.
I buy that, including moderation. Yes.
So, but it again, like the drive-through, it didn't feel right to our brand. We're about wellness and health, and so for me to profit off of selling you crap, like I just that's not the pharmacy we wanted to
you
be.
You know what? I think you're a communist, Deanne Mullins, because profit is the nature of our business.
Yeah,
here.
I'm probably not the best businesswoman out there, or I would be having a Coke machine and, and having all those things.
Right.
And again, I'm not against them. My kids have sodas from time to time, but. We want to be a part of people's wellness journey, and so we've been selective about what we sell. We're congruent, brand congruent.
That's awesome. And tomorrow we're going to be shooting at an independent pharmacy here in town, and it's going to be really nice to get a feel of what that is.
And it's
really great. And so, any other thoughts that you have on that you wanted to let the ZPAC know? Your chance to. Affect the course of Health 3.0, no pressure.
No pressure. Well, I will say this. So, you know, I'm applauding ZDog's efforts to evangelize Health 3.0 and the fact that you quit your job, you know, and said, I'm going to go make a difference and have fun doing it is awesome and fantastic.
Why?
And
why? I'm sorry, yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, I support, I'm a member of the ZPAC. You had me from hello. I mean, it was quick because what you say makes sense. And we owe it. I mean, right now, healthcare is unsustainable. And all kidding aside, seriously, you know, we've had 50 years of hyperinflation. It has created collateral damage to wages, infrastructure, retirement, education, and it's burning out our clinicians. So as much fun as it is, it's really serious stuff. And so I think if you look at every societal movement in history, it starts out with a shared belief. So Martin Luther King, you know, people did that because they believed in social justice. The Wright brothers, you know, they rallied around a technology that could change the world. JFK, in service to country, they rallied and put a man on the moon in less than a decade. So I think that people unite when they share beliefs, and I think a shared belief can change the world. And Health 3.0 is a shared belief.
God, I'm gonna hire you as my speechwriter. That was awesome. That's exactly it, guys. Like, listen to me very carefully. What Deanne is saying is the future of how you change medicine. I get so many messages, I don't know what to do to change medicine. A shared belief that we should work in teams in service of each other and the patient, get paid on outcomes, use technology to help us take care of patients and then get out of the way and integrate as much as we can the information. That is going to transform healthcare, and that shared belief means all of us working towards that goal in our own way locally. All healthcare is local, and that means across the disciplines, pharmacy, nursing, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, dietitians, the guy working in materials, the surgical techs, all of us.
Pharmacy technicians.
Oh, my farm techs have been blowing it up. They've been blowing it up.
And pharmacy technicians, you are our glue. We could not do what we do without you. You're right there in the trenches. My team, I have the most unbelievable team back at home. And I couldn't do what I do without them. They're smart. They're passionate, wonderful human beings. And so God bless our technicians. Sorry.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
So when I bought in, I went to Patreon and I said, I'm going to support this effort to unite frontline practitioners to save healthcare in this country. And you have 650,000 followers on Facebook, give or take a few.
A few, yeah.
Yeah, if just a little bit of those people went on Patreon and donated $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, could you do some cool stuff?
We could break some stuff, guys. And we would continue to give you guys a thank you for that.
It's easy.
It you know, really helps
people
us.
People in the ZPAC say, what can I do? $5 a month.
Patreon.com/ZDogMD. Yeah. And I appreciate, I want to give you a thanks because through the NCPA and your own belief in us, you provide a kind of support that means the world to us. So when we all support each other, when the American Association of PAs supports us, and when you support us, then we support you, that means we build 3.0 together, yeah. And it's going to take all of us.
It's exciting.
It is really exciting. So tomorrow, gosh, I almost tipped the whole table over. I was so excited.
Don't break Tad.
No, Tad, no. Please hold Tad for me. He's very delicate. Tom, any parting thoughts?
I agree with Deanne. Y'all need to give us money. And don't make me whine like those babies over at NPR, okay? Because that's not cool.
Diversify your bonds.
Mm-hmm. I hate you so much, Tom Heinover. Thanks to Deanne Mullins. We out.
Thanks.
Go. Whoa.